Reading this morning from Canto 1, Chapter 18, Texts 45 and 46. Yesterday we heard about the Kshatriyas being responsible for the prosperous condition of the citizens, Prabhupada's language. They're responsible for the prosperous condition of the citizens. So this means the kings themselves are pious. They see to it that the citizens are themselves engaged in piety, both by their example and their direction. And those that engage in sinful activities or activities in violation of codes of Dharma, they're punished up to whatever is necessary to check that influence. And that the objective is prosperity for the citizens based on spiritual or religious principles. The next two verses are dealing with one of our unending topics, the Varnashram system. That the Varnashram system being the instrument through which the kings act, or the instrument that Krishna has created for progressive elevation for all human beings, and the king is to administer according to those codes. And the brahmanas are supposed to instruct and train others how to do that. The educators and the administrators. So, text 45 reads, at that time, that means at that time is when the qualified king is no longer, and monarchy is no longer, so anarchy, or the absence of that descending kind of direction. At that time, the people in general will fall systematically from the path of progressive civilization with respect to the qualitative engagements of the castes and orders of society and the Vedic injunctions. Thus, they will be more attracted to economic development or sense gratification, and as a result, there will be unwanted population on the level of dogs and monkeys. Woo! There are different things. Prabhupada set certain marks, like standards, where below that standard you don't have human society. And one of those consistent standards was the acceptance of Varnashram, or he would say it in a general sense, acceptance of a systematic way of ordering one's occupation towards God consciousness. So ashram and occupation towards God consciousness. Failing to accept that, not human. So monkeys and dogs, animals, animal life. What distinguishes, there's different standards or bars that Prabhupada set like that, but what distinguishes animal society from human society? Sometimes he would say the capacity to consider the message of the Bhagavatam, or consider self-realization. He said, we don't invite the dogs of the neighborhood to come. They would just bark and wag their tails and chew bones, because they're in that body. They don't have the capacity. And similarly, people that don't take advantage of this, putting that standard, then they're no better than the animals, because the human form of life is meant for self-realization. So not availing oneself to self-realization by default means one stays in that position, lower than human. society. And if there isn't that elevation as what are we supposed to be doing with our human form of life, spiritual elevation is not the standard, then material elevation, economic development for sense gratification. And because really the thing is sense gratification. And so then producing children like animals, and the qualities and character of the children being like that. So the tendency is in that direction. So what the sage is saying is that the role of a king is so important. When, for example, in the Bhagavatam, when King Vena was killed by the Brahmanas because he was so bad, there was great concern. What are we going to do without a king? Prabhupada writes, in those times, people couldn't think of having a safe kingdom, a prosperous kingdom, without a king. Or when Dasarath died and Ram was in the forest, the ministers were not only in a great state of lamentation due to the loss of their king, he had ruled for 60,000 years. Who? A kingdom without a king? This is an emergency situation. And they began to then describe like this, so many situations that would result without a king. So the king, in one sense, just represents, okay, there's somebody that's at the head. But then that somebody has to be a super qualified somebody, not just somebody. And so the ministers decided immediately send messengers to bring Bharat and Shatrughna to Ayodhya. Or with Maharaj Yudhisthira in this first canto, when Maharaj Parikshit was born, he's the only survivor, descendant of the royal family. He was very anxious when Parikshit was born to hear from those that knew the science, what will be the quality of this child? Will there be a proper heir to the throne? Because you have to have a qualified king. So the sage is saying, some other system of having a ruler will be there, if not a king. But if there isn't a qualified king, here's what that system will be like. That instrument of the Varnashram system, social orders and occupational divisions and duties prescribed and qualities corresponding to those positions will be neglected and lost. Because the king is the one that's going to uphold it. And the brahmanas will teach it. But if the king is gone, even the brahmanas are teaching it, who's going to follow it? What assurance will there be? And when that assurance is taken away, economic development for sense gratification. Hey, that's the program. And as a result, there will be unwanted population. Just exactly what Arjuna was concerned about in Bhagavad Gita, one of his six reasons why he didn't want to go forward with this battle. Creating a situation where unwanted progeny would be produced. And what is that unwanted progeny? It's the population of today. It's not just, you know, some people that there's rape and there's a child that's produced from that rape, and that's an unwanted progeny. The unwanted progeny standard is far broader. It's persons who don't understand the progressive values of life, and due to urges of an animalistic nature, they produce children. That's what unwanted progeny means. Report. It is foretold herein that in the absence of a monarchical regime, the general mass of people will be an unwanted population, like dogs and monkeys. As the monkeys are too sexually inclined, and the dogs are shameless in sexual intercourse, the general mass of population, born of illegitimate connection, will systematically go astray from the Vedic way of good manners and qualitative engagements of the castes and orders of life. The Vedic way of life is the progressive march of the civilization of the Aryans. The Aryans are progressive in Vedic civilization. The Vedic civilization's destination is to go back to Godhead, back home, where there is no birth, death, disease, and old age. The Vedas direct everyone not to remain in the darkness of the material world, but to go towards the light of the spiritual kingdom far beyond the material sky. The qualitative caste system and the orders of life are scientifically planned by the Lord and his representatives, the great rishis. The perfect way of life gives all sorts of instructions in things both material and spiritual. In the Purusha Sukta prayers, Rig Veda, we had some, the Bhakti Vriksha program on Friday in Palatine. There was a Rig Veda fan. He really liked the Rig Veda. Wanted to know things about Rig Veda in relation to the Bhagavatam. So it's helpful to know when you meet somebody like that. The Purusha Sukta, very, very famous, well known Vaishnava prayers from the Rig Veda, very clearly. If people say, oh, how come Krishna isn't spoken, this was his question, why isn't Krishna spoken about in the Rig Veda? He's so prominent. The Purusha Sukta prayers speak of Krishna, and they speak of Vishnu, and they speak of Brahma, and they speak of the Varnashram system. Because with creation, there's the system of maintaining it and fulfilling its purpose. The purpose of creation is to provide living entities the means of reinstating themselves in their relationship with Krishna. The rectification method for that rebellious spirit that they have. And the Varnashram system is that system. It's specifically described. So some people may come along and say, oh, we don't like the caste system. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna created not the distortion of it or the corruption of it, but he created the system. And the Purusha Sukta prayers confirm Krishna created the system. So we don't throw out things that Krishna created, because unqualified persons have taken that and corrupted it. But we take that which Krishna has created and follow it properly. If we want prosperity and peace and harmony, it's an instrument that yields harmony and connection with the Supreme But it also depends upon persons that want to connect with the Supreme. The atmosphere, it creates an atmosphere that's conducive for achieving that end. But on the other side, persons have to want that end. If they don't want that end, they're not going to want religious principles, they're not going to want to acknowledge the value of brahmanas, they're not going to want a king. So it's chaos. And life goes on in chaos, but it's chaos. Prabhupada writes, the Vedic way of life does not allow any man to be like monkeys and dogs. And specifically, he's speaking in the previous section of the means of procreation, the means of continuing the species. So the Vedic system is, there's a means of a would-be mother and a would-be father qualifying themselves to produce a quality child through that union. Garbhadang Sangskar. Minus Garbhadang Sangskar, it's no different than animals. Monkeys and dogs. So that's graphic. The Vedic way of life does not allow that. We say in the positive, the Vedic way prescribes the same biological event, but elevating it to a position where it leads to progressive values in society. And that is, so that's to be observed. The degraded civilization of sense gratification and economic development is the byproduct of a godless or kingless government of the people, by the people, and for the people. The people should not, therefore, begrudge the poor administrators they themselves elect. It's part of the American dream that the whole world becomes a democracy. It's like we're making progress now. There's elections in Russia. What are those elections in Russia? Anyway, or some other parts of the world. Victory. Now there's elections in Iraq. It's progressive. Fighting. Giving lives and billions of dollars and subjecting the soldiers to terrible emotional scars that are going to be with them for the rest of their lives and lifetimes to make sure that democracy goes forward. When, at least from the Bhagavatam perspective, that's a problem. The problem is not seeing what the solution is, what the root of the problem is. You don't have qualified people. Whatever the system, you don't have qualified people. So how do you get the qualified people? The theme repeats itself, and there must be Brahminical culture. And the qualified brahmanas must be so qualified they can train 12 qualified kings. And the qualified kings must be submissive to the brahmanas, respectful and upholding of the brahmanas and the teachings of the brahmanas, and administer accordingly. So again, the lamentation of the sage is that what you've done, my son, is you've started this terrible thing where the king will be disrespected and the king's position will be lost and someone else is going to take that post. And these are the outcomes of some unqualified person taking that post. So the Varnashram system, or the system of taking that which everyone does, they live somewhere and they do something. Ashram and Varna. And that their place where they live should be for the dedicated for the purpose of God realization. That makes it an ashram, not just a home. And their occupation, according to standards of or codes of Vedic conduct, should be directed towards realization of the Supreme. That's the instrument through which kings, qualified kings, work. And it makes it possible to have one king that rules the whole world. Listening to one lecture where Prabhupada was marveling at, because he lived in New York City for some time and would go for walks, especially in that first year that he was alone. He would just walk around Manhattan, and he would regularly pass by the UN, and his lecturers would comment on, every time I walk by the UN, I see more flags. They say United Nations. I say disunited nations. I see more flags. And they have to have, I mentioned this yesterday, but they have to have so many administrators. Each nation, every time you add another nation, whole set of people that they require the maintenance of the government, so more taxes. So how is it, but they say we need all this administration to make things run. But when there's a qualified king, when there's respect for a qualified king, it's easy. It's much easier than there's no respect and there's no qualified king. It's chaos. You have to have really top-heavy administration just to keep things from turning upside down. But in Vedic times, one flag, one emperor, one administration, but really qualified people. Therefore the comment from yesterday, better to have one qualified king than hundreds of thieves and rogues serving as ministers and posts and taking from the people and not really taking care of their needs because they're not qualified to do so. One more, text 46. The emperor, Parikshit, is a pious king. He is highly celebrated and is a first-class devotee of the personality of Godhead. He is a saint amongst royalty, and he has performed many horse sacrifices. When such a king is tired and fatigued, being stricken with hunger and thirst, he does not at all deserve to be cursed. So, what Maharaj Parikshit did certainly was wrong. But how is the sage regarding? It's insignificant. Look at that. It's instructive. When you see there's a flaw, look at the big picture. And who's the person? Maharaj Parikshit in this case, and somebody else in our case. You know, so somebody else in our case isn't going to be qualified like Maharaj Parikshit. But look at the qualifications of the person. Look at the big picture. What is their consistent character? And if there's some flaw, not like, oh, it's not a flaw, you just pretend it's not a flaw, but it's not something that we regard that person as. Here in the case of Maharaj Parikshit, it's already been described, he's to be viewed as God. He's the emperor. And the country that he's ruling, it's prospering, and the people are safe and protected. The religious principles are being observed everywhere, everywhere. Now, he's a first-class devotee of personality of Godhead. Amongst kings, he's a saint. He's done so many yajñas, horse sacrifices, for the prosperity of his kingdom. And if there's some discrepancy in his character, he's tired and fatigued and he asks for water, and there's some behavior that's, he's not to be cursed for that. The purport, after explaining the general codes relating to the royal position and asserting that the king can do no wrong. This is a rule of respect. Of course, to have that rule apply to today is difficult. The king can do no right. Heads of state can hardly do the right thing. But when you have a qualified king as Maharaj Parikshit, that's the rule. Even if he does something wrong, the king can do no wrong. There's no room for criticism of the king. And therefore, the king is never to be condemned. The sage Shamik wanted to say something about Emperor Parikshit specifically. The specific qualification of Maharaj Parikshit is summarized. Maharaj Parikshit, even calculated as a king only, was most celebrated as a ruler who administered the religious principles of the royal order. So someone who sticks, as Maharaj Parikshit did, or as his forefathers did, Ambarish, excuse me, Yudhisthira Maharaj and Arjuna, ideal emblems of religious principles. So, they're due respect. Again, this is, I find myself in helping devotees who have a problem with somebody. It can be their spouse, or it could be, you know, somebody in the community, or somebody out there in Vaishnava land. And they got a problem because this discrepancy. What the king, what the sage is doing here with the son is holding behind the discrepancy, this backdrop of, look at the character of the individual. So, what that could mean is even what you perceive as a discrepancy isn't even a discrepancy. It's just, it's your mind. Or it's your problem. It's not, you know, what they did was just fine. In fact, by any standard, because you've misunderstood what they did or what they said or their intention or something, you got a problem. But it's a misunderstanding of what they said, did, or what their intention was, often. Because behind, at least in many cases, behind is a person of really good character. So for us to get into that spirit, as it can happen, we're being influenced by Kali. That's the conclusion. My son, you're the, not the king is influenced by Kali and Maya, you are. But he's saying it in a very nice way, very diplomatic. In the Shastras, the duties of all castes and orders of society are prescribed. All the qualities of a Kshatriya are mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, 18:43. They were present in the person of the emperor. He was also a great devotee of the Lord and a self-realized soul. Cursing such a king? When he was tired, and fatigued with hunger and thirst was not at all proper. Of course, the cursing wasn't for his hunger and thirst. The cursing was for his placing this dead snake around the sage's body. That exhibition of anger. And the exhibition of anger in this kind is never justified. Not that the behavior is okay. But the overall character of the king of Maharsh Pariksit is more than okay. The sage thus admitted from all sides that Maharsh Pariksit was cursed most unjustly. Although all the brahmanas were aloof from the incident, still, for the childish action of a brahmana boy, the whole world situation changed. Thus, Rishi Shamika, a brahmana, took responsibility for all deterioration of the good orders of the world. He must have felt really bad. And he was very elevated. Shows later when the situation advanced further. One of his big concerns was the king needs to know he's going to die in 7 days. So he didn't feel insulted. He felt respectful towards the king. He wanted to do an act of appropriate warning to the king, but then he also didn't go himself to inform the king, because he knew that if he came before the king to make this explanation, the king would have felt so embarrassed further. And so rather than embarrassing him further, he just sent a message. Excuse me, king, but you're going to die in 7 days because my son just did this thing. But he was fully respectful to the king, and the king was fully respectful to the sage. And that respect between the Kshatriya and the Brahmana, it's a sign of culture. It's also a formula for success of the progressive march of human society, and without which it leads to deterioration. You break respect and you break relationships. You break relationships and then you have enmity, this party and that party, and there is cold war and hot war with one another when respect breaks down. Respect can sustain when one can see beyond the short term and see the longer term. Very instructive. I've been listening to the narration of Ramayana and it's really very nice. When Lakshman heard from Ram what Kaikeyi had said and done, he was livid. He was ready, with just these two arms, I will knock everybody out of the way and you'll become the king. Just give me the word. And that Kaikeyi, she's a monster. And so forth. And Ram sat him down and cooled him off. It said, Kaikeyi has always treated me like my own mother. She would say, I have two sons, Bharat and you, Ram, and between the two, you are loved by me the most. She is so affectionate, she's my mother. And that this has overcome her in this way, how can it be understood other than there's some higher plan of the Supreme? So we don't hold it against her because she's an instrument of some higher plan of the Supreme. We don't hold enmity towards her. Imagine how much shame is going to come upon her later on. She's going to need support. She's going to need the affection of those that care deeply for her. We shouldn't hold anything against her. Like so forgiving. Completely forgiving. Not like I'm going to go to the forest, but she's going to get hers, because that's the way it works, you know. She's going to get hers. I don't have to be the instrument of her karma. She's going to get it. There wasn't any of that, you know, get back spirit. Just accepting the plan of the Lord. How does that character come? It's nice to read about it, but you know, when somebody steps on our toes, we're going to say, ouch. Why are you stepping on my toes? Get off my foot. What's wrong with you? That deep quality of character, it's hard to come by. That the message that we're getting from this section here is, it comes from qualified association with qualified Brahmanas, and one can become of, it's explicit in this section, of such culture. That culture becomes your culture by that close association of qualified persons. And without that culture, we're part of the problem. We're products of Kali Yuga, going around being Kali Yuga people bashers. Because, you know, it's just what happens when you don't have proper culture. There's always something that happens in life, and then when that something happens, you know, we go off and do our thing, and that upset somebody else, who then they go off, and it just like keeps going. I'm going to get back. It just keeps going. Medicine to cure is association with qualified people. And very carefully preserving our offenseless behavior towards those qualified persons. Even when we may perceive there's something over here, I'm uncomfortable. It's a whole other, the message that we're hearing from the sage is a whole other set of rules with those persons. The king can do no wrong. The qualified person is not to be treated like an ordinary person. Just to repeat it again, even there is some discrepancy. He reduced that discrepancy to, oh, it's nothing. So he put a dead snake around my neck. You know, he's the king. He does no wrong. And you who have criticized him, you're the one who's done wrong. Just see the consequences of this wrong that you've done. Terrible. So, creating what Prabhupada saw as his challenge was to create such qualified people, create first-class men out of crows to produce a swan. That's a challenge. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, Prabhupada quoted him saying, what's the use of so many luminaries that are like stars in the sky? If there's just one moon, it can send all the light necessary to light up the night. So similarly, if just one moon-like disciple can come, then I will be very happy. I will consider that my mission is successful. And then Prabhupada would say, and so I want many moon-like boys and girls. That is my wish. Because the urgent necessity to bring light into this dark age of Kali, that the source, according to the Bhagavatam, is the Bhagavatam. That which is after the departure of Krishna, and the darkness of night of the age of Kali had begun. On the eastern horizon, the full moon, as brilliant as the sun, appeared in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam, giving light to all the unfortunate persons of this age of Kali. The culture of Bhagavat, the Bhagavat message, imbibing that message literally, factually, brings light into one's life. Even, you know, we're in Kali Yuga. Persons who regularly absorb themselves in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's like that. It becomes part of you and it radiates happiness and transcendence and light in life. Even, you know, it's Kali Yuga still going on around us. Very wonderful literature. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam. Any discussion? Yes?
Not so qualified people, many experiences, external things, and certainly not very qualified people.
When you experience what kind of things? Insults from not qualified people. Tolerate. If, you know, they're suffering, and out of their suffering, born of ignorance, then they're speaking or behaving in a way that a suffering person speaks or behaves. They're suffering. Beyond tolerating, you can feel compassion. This unfortunate person. And when your compassion goes out to them, they benefit. Pray for them. They're suffering so much. There's this saying that says, if you could understand the pains and sufferings of another, it'll be very easy to forgive their misconduct. That misconduct is born out of great pain and suffering. But because we're so much in our own autobiography, we only get, you know, why did they say this or do this? Very harsh and cruel. We can get out of our own autobiography and understand with empathy what's happening in their life. Something very painful. You know, it doesn't mean therefore we, you know, seek intimate association with them because, you know, we don't have the qualification to uplift them, but we can certainly be forgiving. Anything else?
Couple of stories regarding the downfall of Hollywood, the caste dramas, and the because of Gautama Rishi, all the mistakes about the boy person. How many take them? There are like so many stories in this world.
Well, how do you suggest we take them?
I don't know.
When a when the source is something as substantial as Srimad Bhagavatam, not just there's a story and there's a story, but the source is the Bhagavatam, it's, we take it that it's very substantial. When a brahmana makes a curse, it's very substantial. And that curse may go extend over time. Again, a Ramayan frame, a point of reference. The very evening that Dasarath died, he remembered vividly the offense that he had made to that old, blind, mendicant couple. And their very words, they appreciated that he came and spoke the truth. But because he had made his offense, they spoke in such a way that he would also have to die in lamentation from loss and separation from his son. And he took it that because that power of the mendicant brahmana is so strong, even I'm the king, it's followed me all these years and now it's finally fructifying. So the statements of the Bhagavatam are not fanciful. At the same time, there's an antidote. If there's some misbehavior of Sringi, and as a result, the Brahminical culture became blemished, even they didn't do anything, but the Brahminical order became stained. But there's things that can be done to counteract that from the Bhagavad perspective also. Such negative influences born of this age of Kali, I don't take them as imaginary, I take them as real. But then, at the same time, there's shelter. Otherwise, you know, the burden is too heavy. Just everything goes down because it's so dark. And then the actions and reactions for those actions that are, just becomes darker and darker. It's how material energy works. Goes down. But by spiritual influence, it can again come up. And that's the theme question, the whole of the Bhagavatam from the first chapter. How can things in this age of Kali be brought up? And it's a theme. How that is to be done. That's the theology of the Bhagavatam. But you know, the passages that say that here's another influence to take things down, how do we take it? It's an influence. It takes things down.
Is it like Kali? Kali influences. So is it like what?
Well, Gautama wasn't an agent of Kali, but the fullness of the age of Kali can bring that influence of that curse strongly, broadly. Bhagavatam calls him the personification of sin. In Bhaktivedanta Thakur's The Age of Kali Drama, there is the personality of Kali and his consort sin. The hideous act one. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Ki jai.